This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 43. This was it. Minute by minute, Tom's options were running away from him. He should have escaped by now. Telling himself he was right to be cautious did nothing to stem the despair he felt or the frustration of his failure to act while he was outside. But it was true. Unless he could take Silas down, he would be hunted and caught. After that, there would be no escape. Ever. But here he was, back in the lab, looking at the booth, the chair. In fact, there were two chairs, one hidden by a partition holding the glass panel door in place. The cubicle was bigger than it looked from the oblique angle he'd viewed it from earlier. Inside, the walls were lined by tiles, patterned grey pyramidic dimples like egg cartons, all the better to muffle screams.
"The first rig I made was crude. It worked, but quite uncomfortable."
As Silas talked, he busied himself at the monitor, his movements short, almost bird-like in their fidgety impatience for results.
"I had to compromise. There was so little technology. Had to be creative. Between the three of us, we discovered enough to fix much of the damage."
Tom was listening, but his eyes continually glanced down at the knife lying beside the monitor. Silas caught him doing this, but just smiled and carried on talking.
"We knew that travelling so far back would be more dangerous for me than for you and your sister. And by Satan, we were right. Damn near killed me."
He paused his flittering at the keyboard and looked through the monitor to another time.
"Could hardly crawl, never mind look after two bairns. She was a good woman, Kathleen, a good woman."
Tom slid his left hand towards the knife.
"Had to be tough on her, but she did a good job on you and Tessa, a good job."
Tom's fingers approached the knife, shaking like snakes' rattles.
"You know, Tom, you're lucky you found me."
"Yeah, right."
"And Tessa too."
Tom was only half listening. Silas tapped at the keyboard, jerking his head from his two-fingered stab up to the monitor and back again as though pecking with his nose as a third digit. Tom felt the roughened plastic handle slide under his tips.
"You would have died without treatment."
Tom paused, only half aware of what Silas had just told him, his brain not quite tuned into his words. Tom's fingers curled around the weapon. Silas pecked at the keyboard.
"And Tess?"
The knife felt good.
"She's like you."
He lifted the blade, felt the pleasure of its heft.
"She's probably got, say, a week left, maybe less."
The weapon his, Tom looked directly at his prey. What should he do? Stick the knife in his shoulder? Threaten him? He had to put him down. He could not just let him come after him. And Silas's words played at the edges of his mind. Tess had less than a week.
"You're the key, Tom."
Suddenly Silas stopped typing and looked directly at the boy.
"That's why you're not going to use that."
He nodded to the knife and Tom froze, confused by Silas's calm acceptance of the situation, wondering why he wasn't going for the ring. He hesitated long enough for Silas's words to sink deeper and penetrate his thoughts.
Why exactly would you want your sister to die, Tom?
Tom's fear swung to anger. He was about to run free and Silas was playing with his mind. But what if it was true?
What's wrong with her? He asked.
Surely you remember how I used to look.
Tom remembered. The man in the boat. His shuffling and crippled gait. His hunched and shriveled body. His half-eaten face. Mottled skin. The pain. The fear and anger. He shivered and tightened his grip on the knife. I remember.
We took the same journey. All of us. You, me, and Tess.
This somehow made sense to Tom.
When it was time to go back, I couldn't leave with you. Not again. You had to do it yourselves. And I'm proud of you.
What are you talking about?
Tom held a knife in front of him. Its lethal point inches from Silas's bald head.
No human has ever done what we've done before. It has its price. A terrible price.
What have you done with Tessa?
You're not listening, boy. I'm not your enemy.
Tom had the upper hand now. He was not much smaller than Silas, and the man spasmed as Tom fought the urge to kill him where he sat. Stone, dead. But he remembered his promise to himself. He could not assume that what Silas said was wrong just because he didn't like him or the words he spoke.
You're speaking in riddles. What's wrong with us? What journey? Is it to do with the light?
Silas smiled.
Oh yes, it's to do with the light. Good to see you remembered. We can fix this. We can find Tessa and help her.
The thought of Tessa in trouble haunted Tom. He eased his grip on the blade but kept it pointed at Silas. Silas fingered his ring.
I could bring you to your knees, Tom. Ask yourself why I haven't done that.
He swiveled his chair and stared at the boy's face.
I need you to trust me.
He slowly raised a hand. Tom reset his grip and prepared for a trick.
He was ready. He could do it. He wanted to do it.
But Silas did not lunge for the knife. He took Tom's free hand in his and despite the revulsion he felt, Tom let him.
I'm going to show you something, Tom. I don't believe you'll have lost the skills I taught you. We have a bond. All three of us.
He gripped Tom's fingers and closed his eyes. And as he did, Tom saw what Silas saw. And he knew without a doubt that this time at least, the man was not lying. He dropped the knife and sank to his knees. What do I have to do? He asked.
The chair is all we've got. Trust me. It's safe.
Tom nodded slowly, stood, and walked towards the booth.
Chapter 44. Sitting there, the constant hum of electricity in the lab was obvious by the sudden silence when Silas closed the cubicle door. The lack of sound pounded in his ears, his blood pulsing a beat of tense anticipation on his drums. The first thing Tom noticed was that the design of his chair was more sophisticated, less like an executioner's device than its counterpart in the cavern. His arms and legs were restrained, but not with the aggression of his Cregan visions. The bands wrapping his wrists and ankles were more like contact points than shackles. The conduits were subtle, but even as the door closed, a fleeting tingle coursed his limbs and tugged his hair erect. There was no uncomfortable neck brace, no sense that if he did not obey, that he would be garrotted by an ever-tightening noose. Silas, swinging between the extremes of hyperkinetic stuttering and slow-burn tension, sat at the monitor, turned his head, and stared long and hard at Tom. It was as though he had lost the power of animation, or was somehow trying to control Tom by thought alone. But then, that's exactly what he had done. It would be wrong to say that the image of Tessa's lonely struggle had reached out from Silas and into Tom when he touched him. Rather, it was more the other way around, as though Silas had helped Tom to tap into what was already there in his own head, teasing it forward to the front of his mind. And now that he knew how to reach it, he could sense her now. She was frightened, alone, lying in the dark. She struggled to deal with something compelling her to a task she did not relish or understand. She was a confused automaton. Tom caught a glimpse of her surroundings, but they were dark. He had no idea where she was. The link between them was tangible and strong. He felt her pulse slide over the pounding in his ears, the rhythm of her breath step-lock his own. Silas too was there, but weaker, much weaker. At once he had guided Tom, shepherding a power that somehow allowed him to bond with his sister without knowing where she was. He needed the boy to find her. It was a stalemate. They needed each other. Tom clenched his fists as Silas turned to the monitor and tapped the command to go. Someone or something was inside his head. A consciousness. Another self, perhaps, writhed beneath the surface he had come to think of as Tom. Through the doppelganger's eyes, he saw an explosive creation of knowledge. A biggish bang spawning a small universe. Something popped in his brain. A miniature vessel burst. A stroke. A blockage freed. Like his nuclear dreams, a billion facts and images, a trillion sounds and events grew from a nucleonic point to planetary, solar, galaxial and universal sizes, clustering, imploding, pulsing. A data furnace ripping through the boy's head, uncontrolled, unordered. This self, the other boy, struggled against the cataclysmic genesis. Tom's muscles spasmed, cramping in sympathy with the boy's struggles to control his tumbling journey through the expanse as it grew from pinpoint violence to white-hot turmoil and then to a billion receding suns in a vast emptiness of spinning nothing. And then, to his left or right, a brief bullet crashed through the boy's mind. It smashed to a brilliant incandescent glimpse of another life, an instant view of a coast of blue and green, separated by a rugged rift of rocks and sand, of pebbles and clustered memories. He was home. Below him, Catriona sitting on the rock, watching the hill for his return. And as quickly as the image smashed through his head, another missile passed, neutrino-like, through the soles of his feet and flashed a picture of a tortured face, before leaving his head broiling in conflict at the rapid change in mood the discordant views conjured there. And then a parcel of noise, laughter, and then another, a scream, and then another, a cry of pity, a feeling of joy, of anger, of agony and ecstasy. The flow of atomized smells, random views, sudden sounds and unconnected snippets of being came and went beyond his control. And as the onslaught continued, as each slice of life wrought havoc with his emotions, an intruder pushed his way through the barrage and gripped the boy's wrist with bony fingers. They pulled him from the centre of the furnace to the quiet shore at the edge of the cauldron where he could suddenly breathe and, for the first time since he closed his eyes, really look around at the strange world surrounding him. What he thought had been universal objects obeying Newton's laws of motions were nothing of the sort. Sparkling clusters of light grouped together, but their movements were not planetary. This discrepancy disorientated Tom even more than he had been. His mind was slowly catching up with what he was seeing when Silas did something at his side and the confusion disappeared. The lights ordered himself to the universe he expected, and at his feet, a blue planet, bright and beautiful, hung in space and filled his vision. Silas tugged Tom's wrists and together they dropped like missiles towards a planet he knew was Earth. Below them, the orb spun one way and then another, and soon the air swept his hair, cool and fresh, his cheeks flapping like a skydiver's, an ocean, and then land, and then ocean again. ships and cities, and then they slowed. An island, forest and mountain. He recognised the grey plunging rocks of Arran, and then the subtle depression below the trees and the house, its crenellated walls imposing a look of fortress on the place. Silas and Tom passed effortlessly through the walls, and Tom watched with fascination as they entered the lab, the man reuniting with his own body and Tom with his. Tom opened his eyes and looked through the glass door. Silas returned the look and smiled benevolently. He did not move his lips, but Tom heard him as clearly as if he had.
"Perfect, boy. Perfect. Now, we can begin."
DreamWorks.com.